The bill to reinstate the death penalty made it through the House. That is not surprising. But did the votes line up pretty much as expected?
I would say for the most part, you had Representative Melanie George Smith, who sponsored the last two repeal efforts, but she voted this week to reinstate the death penalty. She didn't explain why she flipped her vote. And then as for another little change, Representative Andrea Bennett was absent during last year's repeal vote, but voted against re-implementing capital punishment.
Now, in terms of the arguments here, Representative Smith, his argument, as I read it, is that the changes being made to address the constitutionality issue also make it less likely someone would be wrongly executed under this new law. Am I correct in the way I'm reading that? And for those not following closely, what are these changes that he's talking about?
Yeah, that's his viewpoint. So the changes would require a jury to unanimously vote to trigger the death penalty. They've got to come to that decision beyond a reasonable doubt, and they have to find an aggravating factor. So keep in mind, the judge can overrule a jury's decision and impose a life in prison sentence instead. The reason why the most recent law was ruled unconstitutional was because a judge was the one who weighed these aggravating and mitigating factors, and those judges were also able to hand down a death sentence even if the jury voted for life in prison. And that's where the snag was in the U.S. Supreme Court case.
Now this bill moves on to the Senate, which in the past has passed bills seeking to repeal the death penalty when it was legal. But as you've been saying all along, the dynamics have changed here in the Senate. Where is the most likely flip going to come from if we see one?
Yeah, you have two lawmakers who are getting targeted by both sides. So Senator Jack Walsh replaced repeal champion Karen Peterson this year. And in an interview with the Delaware State News in December, Walsh said that he would fight against any effort to bring back the death penalty. But then he told me this week that he's in a, quote, neutral zone in light of the killings of a state trooper and a prison guard. So basically, he's just saying, I'm not going to tell you how I'm voting. And then the other lawmaker is Senator Ernie Lopez. So he's a Republican that voted twice in the past to repeal. But people I've spoken with say they're really going to be leaning on him hard to switch his vote.
And so it is a situation that's going to bear close watching, particularly those particular votes. Let's move on to pot legalization, which officially began its legislative journey this week. First stop, a House committee, which pretty easily voted to release it to the floor for a full vote. Was the level of support from the committee members surprising in any way?
Kind of, sort of. So four sponsors of the bill sit on that specific committee, so it only needed another three votes to get to the floor. Also, the vote tally is a little bit deceiving if you look at it just strictly from a numbers standpoint. So Representatives Jeff Spiegelman and Stephanie Bolden both said that they're kind of apprehensive about the measure and may not actually vote for it when it gets to the floor. But they really wanted to see further debate, so that's why they voted it out of committee. Now, when I spoke with the bill's main sponsor, Representative Helene Keeley, she said that she was confident that it would pass in the House, but it's one of the most difficult types of bills to pass. They're going to need two-thirds of lawmakers in both chambers to sign off on it, and it's really hard to get that level of consensus on anything, let alone something this complicated or, in this case, new.
And that difficulty building consensus was probably pretty evident in the public comment, where things were pretty split. Who's saying what on each side of this issue?
So they're all kind of familiar arguments that we've been hearing for years. Pro-pot advocates say marijuana is less harmful for you than alcohol and that it should be taxed and regulated as such. They're also saying it would bring tons of jobs into the state. And we're talking especially in rural areas where it would add to Delaware's already robust agricultural sector. They aren't really pushing the revenue side too much, even though it's estimated to bring about $22 million in its first year. And they're running into some of the most entrenched and powerful lobbying groups in Delaware. So, for example, hospitals and the healthcare industry in general, they're basically saying no one can prove there won't be any kind of health problems developing from this if more people smoke weed. They're especially concerned about kids getting their hands on it. And then you have AAA Mid-Atlantic saying it could lead to more people driving while high and more traffic accidents. Then also the State Chamber of Commerce says they want more protection for business owners. And that's despite the fact that in this bill you do have a provision that would still let employers drug test their employees and fire them if they don't want them to be consuming marijuana.
Very, very interesting. Unlike the death penalty, this is not going to go to the floor immediately. What's the timetable on this bill moving forward?
Right. So Representative Keeley said that she wouldn't run it before they recess this coming week. So that means that it's going to be until June, at least, until we see it. So if the votes aren't there this year, she could also hold on to it until 2018 because we're in the first half of a General Assembly session.
I was going to say, even if it got to the House in June and passed, it doesn't seem very likely that it would get through the Senate and signed by Governor Carney by the end of this session. There's a pretty good chance this is going to get pushed to next year in one form or another.
Yeah, and Keeley's pretty, I don't want to say apprehensive about pushing this because she's not, but she's willing to slow down and make sure that she has the vote secured. And you just mentioned Governor Carney's signature. If they do pass it, it has this two-thirds bar to reach, right? It doesn't matter if Carney signs it. If he vetoes it, they can come back to the General Assembly, and they have the built-in two-thirds vote needed to override that.
That's a good point. Didn't think about that. And that's that makes it kind of unique in that way, that it would be kind of veto-proof inherently if it is able to get through both
yeah,
chambers.
And that's not even to say Carney also has the option of letting it become law without even signing it.
Leaving it on his desk. Absolutely. The abortion bill you brought up last week, officially updating Delaware's code to match what's been the law of the land since the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in Roe v. Wade. The intrigue, I guess, this week was in some of the efforts that were made to amend this bill before it got voted on. What were some of those amendments? What was that all about?
Well, the amendments would have restricted when pregnant women could get an abortion. So two of them would have outlawed abortions after around 20 weeks of pregnancy. And then another would have required girls younger than 18 to get parental consent before they get an abortion. Those were all defeated and not part of the bill. And just to be clear, these changes this changes nothing that already isn't happening in Delaware.
Right.
So doctors performing abortions here in the first state can determine whether a fetus can survive outside of the womb. And then they're also allowed to abort a fetus after it could survive if it's endangering the mother's health.
And late this week, James, we saw some movement on the state budgets. What did lawmakers unveil there?
Yeah, that's right. So leaders from all four caucuses signed on to a bill that would raise the corporate franchise tax. Now, only the biggest companies in the world that incorporate here in Delaware pay this tax, and no first state businesses would be included in this, according to state officials I talked to. So it would raise about $115 million. And really, it's one of the easiest tax votes that lawmakers have to take here. So it's a pretty safe bet that it was coming at some point. It was included in Governor Carney's proposed budget. And it's really been several years since they've raised it. So that's why they feel comfortable doing so now.
Is this an indication a full budget deal is now closer to happening, or that this is only the only thing that they could actually agree on and the rest may be a little bit more difficult to get done?
Probably about half and half. I mean, neither House Speaker Pete Schwarzkopf or Minority Leader Danny Short would tell me where they were on negotiations over things like personal income tax or any other subjects like that. But the thing that stood out to me was that they were both explicitly saying that talks were going well, which hasn't always been the case. Usually you hear Democrats saying things are going well, and then Republicans will pull out from the negotiating table, at least in the past. But Short says that they need to finalize how they would spend any extra money that might come in from the final June revenue forecast before he's comfortable with a budget deal. And he would really want to prioritize things that are already in the budget, specifically aid to nonprofits, volunteer fire companies, and paramedics.
All right. James Dawson, thanks for being here again.
Thank you.